When I was a kid growing up, the default form of payment was the check and the checkbook. Balancing your checkbook was something people had to do. Now we live in the age of the credit card, and it is infinitely easier and has become as virtual as everything else we use on the internet today. Joining me to discuss how credit cards have evolved from little plastic things to little virtual things is Ashley Safi, who is the head of spend and customer value management at F&B Card. I mean, do you remember those credit card machines, Ashley? You must. You put them in, you put a piece of paper on, you pushed it back and you pushed it, and very often it would get stuck on one side and stuck on the other. I mean, there was like a whole secondary skill set in using the machine for the piece of paper, before digital points of sales came along. And now you don't even need a credit card. I don't have a wallet. I don't have a credit card. Everything is on my phone.
Hi, Zoe. Thanks for having me. I don't quite actually remember Zip Zaps. I've heard a lot about them. I think it was maybe a little bit before my time. But yes, it's insane how actually the card evolution has changed over the past 40, 50 years. So, late 1960s, credit card was introduced. Jump 20 years later, card with a chip was introduced. And thereafter, moving into a contactless revolution, and now it's contactless device and contactless card. So it's really changed so much over the last 30, 40 years. And now we've got virtual cards, right? You just need to have your phone or your watch with you, and you can do purchases one, two, three.
It's such a fascinating thing. While you were talking about those various stages in the evolution, I remember the point. I felt so proud of myself where instead of signing my full signature, I just signed my initials on credit card slips. And I feel like I saved myself those 3 extra seconds. And it seemed like such a kind of, great innovation in the use of my time. But it's these kind of incremental steps that we go through. Of course, 40 years ago, you needed to use a plastic credit card with a piece of paper that was reconciled at the end of the week because we didn't have always on super fast wireless broadband. We didn't have point of sale terminals in a garage store that are hugely sophisticated cellular devices. But it's the evolution of these, for someone like me who looks back at it and remembers watching my mother balancing a checkbook, it's completely evolved.
So it has evolved so much, and I think we're getting to a point where customers want to pay faster. They want people to receive funds faster. It's all about that convenience, and that's really where payments has moved in totality, is to safer, more efficient, more convenience.
I've noticed my changing patterns, and as it happens, I'm an F&B customer, so I'm a big user of the app. I can count the number of times I've been into a branch on one hand in the last 10 years. It has moved to almost self-service. We are smart enough and tech savvy enough to use an app and to use the tools ourselves. And that's just kind of where society has evolved to, hasn't it?
It has. And don't you think it's really empowering as well, right? You don't
Yeah.
have to go into the branch. You don't have to waste time there. It's just more convenient then for customers. So everything going from what you have to think about before going to a store, how much you have to carry with you. You don't need to have necessarily a wallet or a handbag, or I think back in the day, some people even fashioned some moon belt situations,
Yes,
right?
I remember when they were called moon bags.
So all you need is really just a watch or a phone, and you can do everything with it. And everyone has their phone with them in this digital age, right? It's not something you're going to be leaving at home. And it really is empowering to me, and hopefully for all our customers, that they don't need assistance really to do things anymore. They don't have to go into a branch. They can just make the payments themselves. They really, the education around digital and using up apps is incredible. So I really see that this adoption is going to continue to grow in the near future, and things will just get faster and faster.
I agree. I mean, the fascinating thing about, I mean, the general category they're called contactless payments because there is no physical contact, I mean, as much as I was excited about not signing that full signature, I remember mean, I'm sorry, I'm so shallow. My joy at tapping a card and not having to sign anything, you know, that and those were necessary stages to change our behavior for us to get used to that's how we do things. You know, I'm still fascinated where people demand the physical card in presence. It's obviously some extra security layer, but I mean, it's like you have a credit, you have actual physical, you have a wallet. I've evolved so much. I mean, I laughed when I read a New York Times story this year about, you know, the writer's surprise at giving up wallets. But then again, someone from America recently gave me an actual physical check. So I shouldn't, you know, spurn their technology development. Ours in South Africa has been very rapid.
It has been. So it's going to continue to grow, though. When you look at a country like America, they launched digital payments quite a bit before us, right? So Apple Pay already launched there in 2014. In South Africa, we only launched Apple Pay really from 2021. It was a country launch where a lot of the banks actually enabled using Apple Pay.
Yes.
And we've seen phenomenal growth from there. I mean, from 2021, our contactless payments on a device has increased by over 1,200%, right?
Whew.
So it's insane how much it has grown. And just touching back on a previous point, you know, you said presentment of a card. Sometimes, you know, you might think it adds an additional layer of security. Actually, not at all, right?
I know.
A big misconception. And actually, you know, places that are still asking for a physical card and stuff, actually, they need to get up to date with like the payments industry and the payment standards that are required and stuff.
Exactly. If you've got the card, you've got a biometric or a PIN code to protect it. As I understand it, that's as secure.
Yeah, it's just as good, more secure, right? So, I mean, think about using a physical card, right? That requires, let's say, if you're tapping it, sure, might not require a PIN, for example.
Yeah.
But if you insert your card and you put in your PIN in the POS device, right, that is just a simple little four-digit number, right?
Yes, yes.
But to actually go and unlock your phone, only you can unlock that with your
exactly.
biometrics, right? So adding in that biometrics and there's an extra level of encryption on it actually makes digital payments the safest type of payments you can make.
I like that. That might be the headline. The safest type of payment, because they are.
They really are.
And, I mean, we were going to come to this, but let's jump there now. Virtual cards, the great thing about them is you can create them in 10 seconds and you can delete them in 5 seconds. So when I heard about this theory, and you have a separate one for Netflix and Spotify and this and that and internet payments, I did that. I created a specific one for the non-regular internet payments I make in case I ever have any problems. I've never had any problems. But it's just that simple, and you can make as many as you want. I'm a big fan. You don't have to come and explain virtual cards here, but maybe let's just talk about how the evolution of that is in of itself brilliant. Because what is a credit card at the end of the day? It's a token to make a payment. You know, does it have to be a piece of plastic with numbers on it, or you know, something virtual with numbers on it?
I'm glad to hear you using your virtual card. That is fantastic. I wouldn't maybe create one every 5 seconds and delete it, but the point remains is that convenience is there to be able to block a card instantly, right? And obviously there's that added layer of security when you're going online that your CVV number is changing regularly, right?
Yes.
So if your details somehow are compromised, you've got then that extra layer of security that someone's not going to know your CVV number, right?
Also, every time you pay, you have to approve it in the app. I love that, by the way. Thanks for that. I much prefer that to SMSs.
Yes, we're quite big on not using SMSs and pushing, obviously, forward a more digital method. So, yeah, when you're doing an online payments and you approve within the app, right, that is our level of authentication.
Yeah.
And it's so simple.
No, I love that. I mean, I remember at the time writing extensively about how any fraud involved a SIM swap. Someone stealing your SIM or someone at an operator cloning your SIM, something like that. So that seemed like a no-brainer in terms of if you're going to go to the effort of setting up two-factor authentication, which is the technical name for it, do it in a much more secure way. It's one of the few times I've agreed with Elon Musk since he bought Twitter, which is it's a waste of money to send SMSs and they can be spoofed.
100%. You know that if you're receiving a message through FNB on the app, you know that it's coming directly from us, not necessarily a random SMS, you know, with some link or something in it like that, or numbers, you know actually that it's secure then, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I actually had this conversation with the financial manager of one of the blood testing labs, and they kept sending me an SMS to say I owed them 32 Rand, which is not a lot of money. But I eventually phoned the woman and said to her, you know, when I get these weird SMSs telling me I owe money, they usually spam. It's usually phishing. Like, guys, this is 20-year-old technology. I don't trust anything that comes to me by SMS anymore. And it's fascinating to me that people still take received digital communication and they don't apply the same logic. I mean, we're looking at why people get scammed, but it's like Bill Gates emailed me to say he'll give me $100 if I forward this to everybody I know in my email address book. You know, that's like, no. And the great thing about this is that you can't leave your credit card behind. There are, you know, you can't have your card cloned. Because you can just cancel it, or you have to approve it, or the CVV number. We just did a drive recently, my wife and I, to the Free State, and I noticed that all of the toll gates now have cards on the outside. You used to be able to swipe it on the outside. Now you can tap it on the outside. You don't have to give it to a cashier, which just, you know, in the old days, that was how you did it. You gave your card to the waiter disappeared. You know, your card could have been cloned. They came back. It's so fundamentally more secure just in terms of how much contact people have with your credit cards.
Completely right. I mean, you having it in your own hand, you know, you're not passing it on. The N3 development with the tolls is a massive project with FNB and basically the road agencies of the country, et cetera, right? And it's been really adding that additional layer of security. So you're not having cloning and stuff. And just with our virtual cards, going back to it, also the convenience of not having to manually type out a 16-digit card number, right? Just press on it, copy, paste it, you know, online, you know, it's so fantastically easy. And I mean, it's not even just credit card like we're talking about. It's credit card, debit card, Fusion cards,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah.
It's just your card in general is available. You can make a virtual card for it. And I mean, we've got over 5 million virtual cards that have been created over the last 4 years.
That's really interesting because it shows a massive uptake. Like if nobody used it, it wouldn't work, but now everybody's using it. So it shows it is working.
100%. So, I mean, we've had a really steep adoption curve. And obviously with any forms of technology, you have laggards and you have the early innovators, etc. But we've really been trying to push the adoption of virtual card and digital payments because it is safer and the best answer for the customers to use. And often a lot of our behavior and rewards programs are often aligned to that because we know that this is a safer option for our customers to use. So it's been phenomenal growth and we hope to see that. I mean, there will come a point where the market is a bit more saturated and that adoption curve will flatten out and stuff. But at the moment, it's growing steeply.
More than 50% of FNB's payments are now via some form of contactless payment, I read recently. That's impressive.
Yeah, so we're actually sitting now at about 63% of all of our payments are contactless. And when we talk contactless, we're talking about contactless card, you know, whether you're tapping it, or contactless device, your watch or your phone, right? So really getting more comfortable. A big driver of that, though, was actually during COVID-19.
Yes.
Right? People yes. didn't want to touch the POS yes. devices.
Yes.
You know, so that along with a lot of customer education has really helped drive that adoption.
I think COVID was good in general for that. I mean, it's like, I've watched how people have adopted technology for the last 20 years, from desktop computers to laptops to smartphones to tablets. And it was a scenario where you had to use the new way because the old way was, you know, you could catch a germ. For once, being a germaphobe was good for the planet, you know. But because e-commerce similarly and a trust of digital payments in general has gone up.
And when we're talking about now digital payments that have really increased and done well, I mean, we're not even just talking about the digital wallets, right? So
yes.
digital wallets, we talk about your Apple Pay, your Google Wallet, Samsung Pay, where your card, any type, debit, credit, Fusion, is loaded onto inside a wallet. Right?
Yes.
But we also then have other digital payments, wherever a phone or any other form of digital mechanism is used to pay. So whether it be a real-time payment, which we've seen phenomenal increase in adoption of cash going down in the markets,
yeah,
and thus increasing, right? So whether it be Instant Pay or PayShap, you know, that has really grown phenomenally as well from a digital payments perspective.
I'm a big fan of PayShap, even and not just because it's half a Shap Shack, but it just shows the evolution of how we use our technology. What is the signifier we all have in the world? Our phone numbers. It used to be our email addresses. How do we know micropayments work? Well, they worked with PayPal in a market like the US where everyone had an email address. And now we see the change with, you know, we all live in the WhatsApp universe. Your phone number is your identity in the internet. In a way, your email address used to be. And it's just, it's like such a no-brainer for me. I want to pay you. I know your phone number. I can use that to pay you. It's a very clever evolution, I think.
Completely right. I mean, it's everyone knows their phone numbers, yeah, and it's so easy to just pass it on to somebody. And I mean, not even that about PayShap is really impressive. It's, think back to probably 2006, I think real-time clearing was launched in South Africa.
Yeah.
And that allowed for same-day settlement, right?
Yes.
What PayShap is doing, it's actually a rapid payment.
Yes.
And it's automatic, right? It's instant. So not only is it the difference between, you know, actually just giving someone your cell phone number and your shop ID, right? It's also the fastness of it and the speed, as well as the interoperability between the banks, right?
Yes.
So it's not a closed loop system. So it's easily pay between FNB and one of the other large banks that has actually partnered and enabled PayShap.
Yes. It's brilliant. I mean, the new evolution, it's been about a year or so since PayShap launched. The new evolution is request to pay. So someone can send me a request, I can pay them, or I can pay a merchant. You know, I've seen this work with incredible efficiency with M-Pesa. I've seen this. This is a fantastic, simple, quick, easy way to do things. It's exactly what consumers want. We don't want to know what the complexity. I always use the analogy of the petrol car. Nobody knows how the engine works. You just turn the key, or these days push a button, and off you go. And that's how most technology should be. So I'm pleased banking has caught up to the rest of us. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think it's really been, I mean, a massive focus. Obviously, in South Africa, it really has increased a lot. The payments industry has evolved significantly. But from an F&B perspective, we've really focused on, cool, this is your customer. This customer has certain needs, right? You need to pay someone. You want to receive the payments. You know, you've got certain needs, right? And we've focused all of our payment solutions around that, right?
Yes.
And then we're trying to focus on, obviously, the speed, the safety, the convenience with it, that a customer doesn't have to, you know, really now figure out anything difficult. It's just right there. So accessibility is also a major one, right? So trying to make our payments more accessible to everyone in the country.
So the evolution of the general payment market is just going to carry on evolving, you know, isn't it?
Definitely, right? So we're going to see continued adoption of using of digital wallets and contactless payments, obviously, and rapid payments, right? And then, you know, the cool thing is it'll be more and more accessible to people, making sure more and more people are able to use it, whether they've got then a smartphone or even enabling solutions via USSD in the event that you don't have a smartphone, right?
So well, I mean, I'm a big fan of e-wallet. Why is e-wallet worked? Because someone with a bank account and an app could send money to someone without a bank account and an app. It's brilliant. I can pay anyone with a feature phone.
Correct.
And they can go to an F&B app and get the money. I mean, there's a brilliant shortcut to the payment system that just didn't exist 10 years ago.
Correct. I mean, they don't even need to go into the app, right? They can just go to ATM and, you know, they've received the PIN, etc., to withdraw their money, right?
Where is this going to evolve to, do you think?
I think it's going to evolve to a point where customers, at the moment, customers want to still have at least a card in hand as a backup, you know, and that's largely because of facilitating conditions, right? Like, you don't actually need a card, right? But
yes. In
the event, though, that a merchant, for example, hasn't quite updated their tech and for some reason their device is not contactless,
yes,
you know, customers like to just have that backup. But as the payments industry evolves from both a merchant perspective and from the consumer perspective, you know, that will fade away over time, right? And also then the need for cash.
Yeah.
So obviously there's still a big need for cash in our country, but we have seen over the last 5 years, cash has been on a nice decrease every single year, because, and we see that shift going to either card payment rail, such as digital wallets, or even tapping of a card, and then the rest of it is going to these real-time instant payments. So I think instant payments and rapid payments are going to grow phenomenally, as well as the digital payments. And then there's probably some cool, you know, new technology, smaller devices, smaller, you know, everything is just getting smaller, quicker, faster.
I know.
Right?
I mean, one day I'll be tapping my ring instead of my watch. I don't use my watch, actually. I use my phone, because I find, and it's a weird thing, because people present the card, the machine to you, and then you have to do that. Whereas, you know, if you presented your watch and they turned the card over, it's just one of those quirky little, you know, you've been brushing your hair this way forever. Well, I haven't, but, you know, and suddenly you've got to brush it with that hand. It's
the movements.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
Yeah, it's kind of like people aren't. So I find that whole awkward thing with my watch. So I don't use my watch. I use my phone. It's, you know, it's the same thing.
Well, fundamentally, I mean, it's using NFC technology. So near field communication, right? So, I mean, we've seen countries that are using, for example, you can put an NFC chip, for example, inside of a ring, for example, right?
There was a bit of confusion with F&B's Tap to Pay being discontinued, but actually it was just the name of one of your brands, wasn't it? And the functionality has not been discontinued.
So F&B Tap to Pay, it was an industry first in South Africa.
I remember.
It was when it was enabled, really smart guys enabled it from F&B side, that, you know, you could actually just use your phone to tap, you register your card and F&B Tap to Pay. And that though now, we've had a really great adoption for it, but we want to make things more easier for our customers, right?
Yes.
So with the likes of a Google Wallet or Samsung Pay, etc., where they are continually developing their technology.
Yes.
And I mean, their apps will include, for example, adding passes for your you know, your tickets,
boarding,
for example, boarding passes, or adding loyalty cards,
or my
cards,
loyalty
et cetera,
cards, exactly.
Right. So by us discontinuing Tap to Pay, a lot of that was removing the burden of making another decision. You know, do I use Tap to Pay? Do I use Google Wallet? Do I, you know? And there was a bit of confusion in the market that we were potentially discontinuing the ability to tap your card.
I know. Sorry about that. I knew immediately it was fine.
Not that at all. So contactless cards remain contactless devices. You can still use your phone to use Apple Wallet, Google Pay, Samsung Pay.
Yeah.
Just F&B's own homegrown solution is being discontinued. And I mean, that was a difficult choice for us to make, to discontinue it, because we have had such great adoption over the years.
But I mean, it's a no-brainer to me. Why would you build your own railway when Google and Apple and Samsung are building a railway? It makes no sense to me. Why don't you focus on building railway carriages, which in a sense is which is more what a bank would do than actually build the railroad, you know. So it made perfect sense to me, but clearly not everybody understood the difference.
Yeah, and I mean, we've also made the user experience from within the F&B app to actually load your card onto Apple or Google Wallets or et cetera, you know, really easy, because we've got that in-app ability to just say add to wallet, you know.
I noticed that actually, because I did that recently with a whole bunch of new virtual cards. It was really quick. It was a lot quicker than it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago when I first started doing it. You know, so that process alone has sped up, is much more convenient, takes less time.
F&B has really worked hard on that user experience, right?
Yeah.
Customers don't want to struggle on what must I do? Must I go to a different app now? Must I go put in a card number?
Yeah.
You know, they just want a simple button for, you know, and that's why Apple Wallets and Google Wallets and stuff have been enabled like that on the app, that it's, you know, that integration has occurred, right?
Yeah.
It just makes things so simple for our customers. And also, by us discontinuing F&B's Tap to Pay homegrown solution within the F&B banking app,
yeah,
it's also helping remove the extra decision-making burden on customers, right?
Yeah.
I think it's lots of cool things are going to be happening in the digital payments space, I would say, from an industry perspective. And F&B is also always trying to, you know, be on the forefront of everything and, you know, always trying to find innovative solutions on how to make things more accessible and easier for our customers. So lots going to be happening.
Ashley Safi, Thank you for joining us. And thank you for listening and watching. My name is Toby Shapshak. I'm the lowly editor-in-chief of Stuff. Our executive producer is Sally Hudson. Our director of audio is Hans Baumgarten. Our director is Tepo Taela. You can read more every day on stuff.co.za. And please like us and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.